to the lost souls, the disintegrated spirits, the wanderers, the dreamers, and the seekers. Welcome to the Embodied Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Danielle McGinnis. Our work in this podcast will be to foster healing, transformation, self-expression, creativity, and the development of consciousness. So with our intentions grounded firmly, let's settle in and do some integration work. Hey friends, happy Thursday and welcome back to another episode of the Embodied Podcast. If you guys are loving what you're hearing on the show, I would really appreciate it if you slid over to iTunes, dropped a 5-star rating or a written review and just let me know what you are loving about the show, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of. Any and all feedback is welcome. That feedback gets the show organically into more ears and more souls across the world. So on today's episode, I want to do a quick little Q&A. So I got a few questions on my Instagram page, and actually I just want to do a single Q&A. So if I decide to unpack more of the questions that came in, I will do that in future episodes. But a question came in that I thought was a really beautiful question, and I'm going to do my best to explore it and circle around it. And the question is, how do mood or personality disorders like bipolar or borderline interact with or affect how psychological archetypes play out in our psyche? First off, what a beautiful articulate question, by the way. Super complex question. And so I want to preface this episode by saying that, you know, I'm not a licensed psychologist, and so I'm not going to be discussing anything about diagnosing bipolar or borderline personality disorder or anything like that. But what I can speak from is my experience, my education, and my knowledge in the realm of depth psychology and in the realm of somatic experiencing and tracking nervous system states. I'll do my best to tie this together. So if we just take bipolar, for example. So bipolar, if you look it up, it's defined as a disorder associated with episodes of mood swings ranging from depressive lows to manic highs. And so if we take away any diagnostic material, any DSM material, and just purely track that on a nervous system chart, with a bipolar symptomology, what we're looking at is a person who is transitioning from a state of being an energetically activated state, a very high manic state, that's what it's called, is manic, and then goes into this depressive low. And if we do track that on a nervous system chart, what you could see with a person who is experiencing bipolar disorder is any person who is living with their foot on the gas in the activations, and this doesn't mean that this person has to consciously be putting their foot on the gas. This means their nervous system is revved up on high, and so it's like there's a metaphorical foot on the gas, and their nervous system is stuck on a state of on. And so they're in this very high-level activation state. And I'm assuming, from a nervous system body perspective, that depressive episode is a response from the body that is putting a cap on that high activation state because it's too much for the body to handle at a certain point. And so the body goes into a state of freeze or collapse, or the tension is there's a cap put on it, and that can show up in symptoms such as depressive lows. So when we start to tie this into the archetypal perspective, if we go into Jung's theory of archetype, I think that's important. One of Jung's unique contributions to the study of the unconscious in particular was his theory that there's an autonomous nature of the psyche. And Jung realized at a certain point in his career when he was working with people in a psychiatric hospital that the psyche has a capacity for dissociation and splitting. And this was pre all of this nervous system hype. And so Jung is starting to tap into this psyche-soma connection really, really early. But what this implies in his theory is that the center of the conscious mind, so the ego, it can become possessed by autonomous forces that might have intentions that are different from the ego's intention. And this is important in particular because you don't necessarily have to have personality disorder or, you know, schizophrenia or any psychopathological disorder to experience these mild forms of dissociation and splitting. Like, this happens. It's a part of psychic self-regulation. So Jung didn't necessarily believe that the unconscious was just a storehouse of repressed personal contents like Freud had brought forward. He brought forward that the unconscious had this universal shared layer that had been passed down throughout humanity, and he called that the collective unconscious. And so we want to explore how this autonomous nature of both the individual unconscious and the collective unconscious, how Jung kind of like bridged these two along with the psyche-body connection, that these psychological mood disorders have implications in the body. So let's start with this Jungian psychodynamic model. So Jung has this theory, it's called the psychoid theory. It's the theory of the psychoid realm. But it provides this map to the edges and the dimensions of the known, the unknown, and the unknowable aspects of psyche. So the psychoid, according to Jung, was completely inaccessible to the conscious mind. So psychoid is, quote, between the purely psychic and the purely instinctual. This is a level within which the physical, the psychical, and material mix and mingle, a kind of fused state of purely gross physical reality of instinctual drives in its transformation into something higher, which it would be psychic. So again, Jung postulated that the realm of instinct, so the realm of the body, the autonomic nervous system, was not separate from the realm of psyche, nor could we reduce one to the other. So Jung was truly trying to hold the tension between the material world of soma and the presence of a psycho-spiritual reality without getting lost in biological reductionism by saying that this archetypal psychological presence means this. We can do that, and it kind of helps make sense of some things, but he was pretty clear that we can't pin it down and we can't reduce it that clearly. So again, Jung described the psychoid phenomena using the metaphor of a spectrum. And so on one end of the spectrum, this symbolizes the realm that's associated with pure instinct. So this is pure body, and the other is pure spirit. And both of these edges of this spectrum possess components that are unknowable to the human psyche. And the human psyche is positioned in the space between these two unknowable realms. So through a process that Jung called psychization, the contents from these unknowable edges of this spectrum, they hit a point in which the unknowable instinct and spirit collide. They transcend their opposition, and they move from unknowable to unknown. And at that point, they're able to enter into the human psyche. And it's here where we have these potentially knowable contents that can show up as archetypal images. So as this unconscious content of the human psyche slides along this spectrum between body and mind, so pure body and pure mind, instinct and spirit, they struggle with one another, they intermingle, they unite to form units of energy and motivation. And before reaching our conscious awareness, the contents of instinct and spirit, they reach a ground that Jung called the collective unconscious. So this is where we have the human inheritance of this psychic structure across all of humanity. And it's in the collective unconscious where these clusters of energy form into common patterns that Jung called primordial or archetypal images. So, in short, that is the theory of archetypes. Jung discriminated between the archetype as such, so that is, lives in that realm of pure spirit, it's unknowable to the human psyche, and archetypal images. So archetypal images in particular have gone through this process of psychization. They become knowable to the human psyche, and they can emerge from this level of the collective unconscious through symbols, myths, stories, religious motifs, and this symbolic content makes itself known to the conscious mind through intuitions, visions, dreams, perceptions of instinct, images, emotions, ideas. So it's really important to see that in every single symptom, there's a symbolic underpinning, there's a symbolic pattern that is held within that symptom itself. And so again, Jung's symbolic perspective of the psyche asserts that everything that enters into consciousness contains content that points back to this autonomous, self-regulating center of the unconscious. Jung called this self-organizing center the self. This is the archetype of wholeness and the regulating center of the psyche. So given this symbolic perspective, the contents emerging out of the unconscious towards consciousness, they emerge from that collective unconscious and they collide with contents of the personal unconscious and they form clusters, and these clusters are called complexes in the field of depth psychology. So in Jungian psychology, the ego, your subjective sense of self, is not the center of the psyche. It's just another complex in the psyche. But what makes the ego complex unique is that it carries with it the capacity for conscious awareness. And Edward Edinger said that the ego is just the seat of the subjective identity, where the self is the seat of the objective identity. The self is thus the supreme psychic authority and subordinates the ego to it. So in Jung's map of the psyche in particular, the ego is metaphorically imaged as a small buoy of consciousness that just floats amongst other contents within a vast and powerful ocean of unconsciousness. And although our will and our conscious choice are held within that ego complex, Jung emphasized that unconscious contents still possess that level of autonomy over the personal will. And so when a complex becomes constellated or is sufficiently energetically charged in the unconscious, those contents break through into consciousness. And what that looks like is experientially the flood of archetypal contents that come into awareness within that complex that busts through our conscious awareness. There's typically an image, and this can feel disruptive to our habitual state of consciousness. And this gives us a sense that we're not fully in control of ourselves. And my intuitive hunch here is that in individuals that experience borderline in particular, the boundaries around the ego complex are maybe not as firm, and this archetypal content of the unconscious floods in easier for those particular individuals. And so again, it brings a subjective sense that you're not fully in control of yourself, which can be scary, but that is the first kind of disposition to a fragile ego that's exposed to the numinous, massive amount of energy coming from the collective unconscious, is this subjective state of overwhelm. So Murray Stein said that experientially one is threatened with a loss of control over one's emotions and to some extent one's behavior. So although the person has a modicum of will, these complexes ultimately serve the goal of the self. So the self is the self-regulating archetype of the psyche. So this leads me into talking about Jung's process of individuation. So individuation involves creating a dialogue and a rapport between that ego complex and the self, as well as making conscious these complexes that serve the drives of the self. So one may believe up to a certain point in time in their life that they are in full control of their experience, but then the complexes come forth and they disrupt our one-sided development of our ego. And if that's the case in the Jungian perspective, it's ultimately serving as a self-regulating goal. It's serving the goal of self-regulation towards wholeness that is coming from the capital S self. But when this happens, one can become flooded with symbolic material from the unconscious, and that can come again in the form of dreams, compulsions, impulses, psychosomatic symptoms, or any other form of neurosis. But this neurosis, from a depth psychological point of view, is required in order to allow the ego to develop a right relationship with the self. And while these complex reactions that erupt out of the unconscious might initially feel pathological to one's habitual state of awareness, again, it may be a move towards psychic wholeness and an invitation, despite being a painful one, in how that unique individual can learn to be in right relationship to that which is unknown. That's the depth psychological perspective in particular. But sometimes early in life, we can have this kind of grandiose identification with the self. We can think that we are the center of the world. And when we experience situations in life that pull us away from that developmentally narcissistic point of view, it kind of deflates our personality. And oftentimes, archetypally, when we're working with mood disorders, my intuitive hunch here is following the nervous system patterns, there is this swinging from state of inflation and being in this high state to this deflated state where we feel isolated. And oftentimes, if we don't approach these symptoms with curiosity to what this is trying to symbolically communicate, this can cause this unconscious psychic swing that violently swings between states of inflation and alienation from these archetypal grounds. And again, while it can cause immense suffering in an individual, it can also give the potential to have deeper understanding about your perceived sense of control in relationship to the mysteries of the unknown. It also holds the potential to complexify your consciousness and its relationship to those unknown and mysterious grounds of being. I think the most important thing that I wanted to share about this, in Jung's ability to provide this kind of psychodynamic map and path for individuals who are suffering in their in the connection to that symbolic ground of being, it helps individuals recognize that maybe they're not alone in these conditions of suffering. And most importantly, this connects an individual with the recognition that suffering actually may hold intense meaning and value within the totality of someone's life. And if that's the case, someone's rigid grasp on their habitual state eventually does have to be corrupted in order to come into right relationship with the mysterious forces of the unconscious. And, you know, when we're looking at these mood disorders in particular, and I know that I started with bipolar disorder. Complexes in particular, they have this kind of personal shell and this archetypal center, but they are affect-laden contents coming from the unconscious. And so if we look at them as little pockets of energy that have archetypal patterns and images associated with it, we can see that someone who is experiencing bipolar disorder in particular, there are going to be particular pockets of energy that bust forth into consciousness when that person is in that nervous system high state. And then there's going to be different pockets and patterns of energy that bust forth when someone's in a low state. And that can be incredibly confusing to the person's sense of self, the ego complex, because it might feel like the subjective sense of self is basically being thrown to a state of high and then being exposed to all these different images and ideas that are connected with the archetypes there into a state of low, and then all the maybe different archetypes and images and things that are down there. And in particular, when someone is in a state of mania, the values that are coming from the unconscious and those archetypal forces to keep that person in that state of high might have values associated with doing and keeping your foot on the gas and being successful and just being on all the time, performing, seeking validation. I don't know. It's so various in particular. But then if that person swings down into that lower state, the values of the archetypal images and figures that come up might be more closely associated with apathy, with lack of motivation, with the what's the pointness of all of this. And so again, that can be confusing for someone who is swinging between those states. And so from a depth psychological nervous system oriented position in which I work with clients, it really is about trying to titrate some of that intense energy that sits in that person that's in that chronically on state, to release and complete some of that energy so that that person can learn safety and regulation in a lower activation state. And then if they're in that off state or that down state or that low state, we have to discern if that's not just a free state because the body has been so overwhelmed with the high. And so it's basically working all that high energy underneath the freeze, and again teaching that person that there can be safety and resource and a different way of orienting to the world, as opposed to living on the edges of the highs and lows, of really teaching the nervous system and allowing that person to explore that interior space with a little bit more boundaries and containment around the edges. And so I don't know if any of that made sense or I was able to tie any of that together, but that was Jung's map of the psyche. And so I wanted to offer that because, again, these psychological archetypes, they're not just psychic images. They're deeply connected to body and instinctual patterns and drives. And so psyche and body are not separate. And so when I'm working with somebody, it's not just looking at their nervous system. It also is looking at, okay, if we were to, for example, explore someone who is in that like kind of lower depressive state of bipolar, for example, and this is, I really want to preface that this is such a personal unfolding, like people are going to present so differently, but I could look at maybe some different, you know, symptoms of that and try to find that in the body so that, let's just say, the feeling as if I want to give up, and trying to find where is it in the body that feels like it just wants to give up. Like, where is that? And this is just a spontaneous intuitive tracking based on the person. But if we were to find and track that impulse of where that person wants to give up, traditionally, from my perspective, you can find different images that live within those sensations. And we can use images and sensation to help explore and create more flexibility around how we work with this material. It doesn't just have to be a biologically reductive approach in taming the nervous system. We can get really creative and explore, like, what are these figures that are living in your symptoms trying to communicate to you through these symptoms. So anyway, very long, very complex. If you guys have questions about this episode in particular, feel free to reach out and join my free community. There you can ask all the questions on the community board. So just some quick housekeeping notes. So I wanted to mention to you guys, on October 30th, my fiance Rick and I are launching our 6th book club, and we are going to explore James Hillman's The Soul's Code, and that's an exploration on the psychological daemon. It's about the potential that lies within every personality that is unfolding and revealing the deeper nature of someone's character throughout their life. And so that starts again on October 30th. I will put details, if you want to join that, in the show notes. It is donation-based, so if you're interested in joining a community, we meet once a month to go over the book for 5 months. And then secondly, I'm doing a mother archetype workshop series where I'm going to be exploring a text by Sybil Burghauser Ori, and it's called The Mother Archetypal Image in Fairy Tales and Myth. And we're going to be exploring the mother archetype in particular. This workshop series is also donation-based, and it starts the day after the book club, so October 31st. This is going to be every other week. We're going to be meeting on Monday evenings every other week, and we're going to be meeting for 11 sessions. So those are the different group offerings that I have coming up this fall. And so if you're interested in looking for budget-friendly community, you can check both of those offerings out in the show notes, and I would be happy to give you more info on either of those. So anyway, thank you for hanging in there as I circle around these topics and keep it messy and complex like it truly actually is. So anyway, I will talk to you guys on Sunday. Bye, guys. Thank you.